Today, I'm taking transportation that will leave Bratislava's main train station and head north through Slovakia, crossing the border around Wrocław into the Czech Republic. And there, around Brno, I will head northeast toward Katowice, where I probably will need to change trains to continue my journey, quite possibly traveling through the town of Oswiecim, or Auschwitz, before reaching my destination of Krakow. While traveling and watching the beautiful countryside, this is the ideal time to learn more about the history of Poland. There are still Americans who think of Poland as run down, full of rusting factories, smoggy cities, and gloomy natives. Perhaps they'd be speechless when they stepped into Krakow's vibrant main square, Gdansk's colorful pedestrian drag, or Warsaw's lively old town. While parts of the country are still cleaning up the industrial mess left by the Soviets, Poland also has some breathtaking medieval cities that show off its warmth and welcoming people, dynamic history, and unique cultural fabric. The Poles are a proud people, as moved by their spectacular failures as by their successes. Their quiet elegance has been tempered by generations of abuse by foreign powers. The Poles place a lot of importance on honor, and you'll find fewer scams and con artists here than in other Eastern European countries. In a way, there are two Polands: lively, cosmopolitan urban centers and countless tiny farm villages to the countryside. City dwellers often talk about the simple people of Poland, those descended from generations of farmers working the same plots for centuries and living an uncomplicated traditional lifestyle. This large contingent of old-fashioned salt-of-the-earth folks who like things the way they are is a major reason why Poland was so hesitant to join the European Union. Poland is one of Europe's most devout Catholic countries. Catholicism has long defined these people, holding them together through times when they had little else. Squeezed between Protestant Germany, originally Prussia, and Orthodox Russia, Poland wasn't even a country for generations, from 1795 to 1918. Its Catholicism helped keep its spirit alive. In the last century, while under communism, as that age is referred to, Poles found their religion a source of strength as well as rebellion. They could express dissent against the atheistic regime by going to church. Some of Poland's best sites are churches, usually filled with locals praying silently. Visitors are sometimes surprised at how much of Poland's story is a Jewish story. Before World War II, 80% of the world's Jews lived in Poland. Warsaw was the world's second largest Jewish city after New York, with 380,000 Jews out of a total population of 1.2 million. Poland was a magnet for Jews because of its relatively welcoming politics. Still, Jews were forbidden from owning land, and that's why they settled mostly in the cities. But the Holocaust and a later Soviet policy of sending troublemaking Jews to Israel decimated the Jewish population. This tragic chapter, combined with post-war border shifts and population movements, made Poland one of Europe's most ethnically homogeneous countries. Today, virtually everyone in the country speaks Polish, and only a few thousand Polish Jews remain. Poland is historically extremely pro-American. Of course, their big neighbors, Russia and Germany, have been their historic enemies. And when Hitler invaded in 1939, the Poles felt let down by their supposed European friends of France and Britain, who declared war on Germany but provided virtually no military support to the Polish resistance. America has always been regarded as the big ally from across the ocean. In 1989, when Poland finally won its freedom, many Poles only half-joked that they should apply to become the 51st state of the United States. In 2012, Poland, jointly with Ukraine, hosted the Euro Cup Soccer Championship. For Europeans, this is just one step down from the Olympics. Cities hosting matches included Warsaw, Gdansk, Poznan, and Wrocław, all destinations for my Poland travel. Throughout the country, but especially in these four cities, a wave of new construction and refurbishment is sweeping dingy old quarters, leaving them refreshed and energized. Poland is also using the Euro Cup as an excuse to beef up its rail system, as it creates a network of high-speed trains to move quickly and smoothly between major cities. To break the thick skin of what would seem like brusque Poles, just greet them with a smile and a friendly Dzień dobry. A few short facts. There are nearly 38.5 million people in Poland, slightly more than California. 97% are ethnically Polish and speak Polish, though English is also widely spoken. 3 out of every 4 Poles are practicing Catholics, and the population is younger than most European countries, with an average age about 37, where Germany is actually 42. The country is about the same square mileage as New Mexico, or Illinois and Iowa put together. Overall, it's flat. Poland has been a corridor for invading armies since its infancy. The Vistula River of 680 miles runs south to north up the middle of the country, passing through Krakow and Warsaw and emptying into the Baltic at Gdansk. Poland's climate is generally cool and rainy, and the 40,000 storks just love it. Biggest city is Warsaw, the capital, with 1.7 million, Lodz as its second largest, and Krakow with 757,000 as its third largest city. Its currency is a zloty. Its real estate, a typical one-bedroom apartment in Warsaw, would cost probably about $600 a month for 250 square feet. Poland's mostly figurehead president selects the prime minister and the cabinet. The flag, the upper half is white and the lower half is red, the traditional colors of Poland. Poetic Poles claim the white represents honor and the red represents the enormous amounts of blood spilled by the Poles to honor their nation. The flag sometimes includes a coat of arms with a crowned eagle representing Polish sovereignty. Under Poland's many oppressors, including the Soviets, the crown was removed from the emblem and its talons were trimmed. On regaining its independence, Poland coronated its eagle once more. The average Pole spends just 4% of what a German spends on personal consumption. Half of all Poles use the internet, and the average Pole will live to be about 75. The average woman gets married at 24 and will have 1.25 children. The not-so-average Poles, despite the many Polak jokes you've heard, you actually know of many famous Polish intellectuals. They include Pope John Paul II, Nicholas Copernicus, Friedrich Chopin, Marie Curie, Joseph Conrad, Roman Polanski, Lech Walesa. Even more helpful hints I need to remember as I enter Poland. The restroom signage may be a little confusing. Of course, I'm a Danska, but also, if I just see a circle on a bathroom, that's for women. The triangle is men. To pee, I might have to pay, so I want to keep a little bit of one zwoodies around. As far as the train station lingo goes, the PKP is for the Polish National Railroads. The PKS is for buses. Gwowny means the main train station, and they're all Gwownys, except for Warsaw, where it's Centralna. Platforms are peron. Exits, look for WYJSCIE. And for tracks, is the tour. Departures are generally listed by platform, so I'll need to keep an eye out on both sides of the track for the right train. Arrivals are PRZYJAZDY and departures ODJAZDY. To buy tickets, I'm looking for the CASY, CASY, and there I'll need to find whether it's a domestic ticket window or an international ticket window. I'll always want the domestic in Poland. I can ask my fellow travelers what the right line is. Smile and write down the destination and time that I want. Virtually every museum in Poland is closed on Monday. The ticket window for any museum usually closes a half hour before closing time, and this is strictly enforced. There are many Polish artists that I'll be looking for. Certainly Chopin when I'm thinking of music, Jan Matejko when I'm looking at the 19th century painters, and Stanislaw Wyspinski, who is also a painter and a playwright, who led the charge of the Polish answer to Art Nouveau in the early 1900s. When it comes to studying Polish history, it's as fascinating as all the other Eastern Bloc countries of this era. And also, it could be that I actually have some Polish background, but that remains to be proven yet. Poland is flat. Take a look at the topographical map and the country that I'm passing through, and I can see the Poles' historical dilemma. The path of least resistance from Northern Europe to Russia leads right through Poland. Over the years, many invaders, including Napoleon and Hitler, have taken advantage of Poland's strategic location. The country is nicknamed God's Playground for the many wars that have rumbled through its territory. Poland has been invaded by Soviets, Nazis, French, Austrians, Russians, Prussians, Swedes, Teutonic Knights, Tartars, Bohemian, Magyars, and about 1,300 years ago, Poles. The first Poles were a tribe called the Polonians, or People of the Plains, a Slavic band that showed up in these parts in the 8th century. In 966, Majewsko I, the Duke of the Polonian tribe, adopted Christianity and founded the Piast dynasty, which would last for more than 400 years. This was the beginning of Poland. Poland struggled with two different invaders in the 13th century, the Tartars, or the Mongols, who ravaged the south, and the Teutonic Knights, or the Germans, who conquered the north. But despite these challenges, Poland persevered. The last king of the Piast dynasty was also the greatest, Casimirus the Great, who famously found a Poland made of wood and left one made of brick and stone, bringing Poland and its capital, Krakow, to international prominence. The progressive Casimir also invited Europe's much persecuted Jews to settle here, establishing Poland as a haven for the Jewish people, which it would remain until the Nazis arrived. Casimir the Great died at the end of the 14th century without a male heir. His grandniece, Princess Jadwiga, became king. The Poles weren't ready for a queen, and married Lithuanian Prince Vladislav Jagiello, uniting their countries against a common enemy, the Teutonic Knights. Their marriage marked the beginning of the Jagiellonian dynasty and set the stage for Poland's golden age. With territory spanning from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea, Poland flourished. When the Jagiellonians died out in 1572, political power shifted to the nobility. Poland became a republic of nobles, governed by its wealthiest 10%. These elected a series of foreign kings. Many of these kings made bad diplomatic decisions and squandered the country's resources. To make matters worse, the nobles' parliament introduced the concept of liberum veto, whereby any measure could be vetoed by a single member of parliament. This policy, which effectively demanded unanimous approval for any law to be passed, paralyzed the parliament. By the late 18th century, Poland was floundering and surrounded by three land-hungry empires, Russia, Prussia, and Austria. Over the course of less than 25 years, these countries divided Poland's territory among them in a series of three partitions. In 1795, Poland, nicknamed the Cake of Kings, to be sliced and eaten at will, disappeared from Europe's maps, not to return until 1918. Even though Poland was gone, the Poles wouldn't go quietly. As the partitions were taking place, Polish soldier Kosciuszko, a hero of the American Revolution, returned home to lead an unsuccessful military resistance against the Russians. After another failed uprising against Russia in 1830, many of Poland's top artists and writers fled to Paris, including Chopin and the poet Adam Mickiewicz, whose statue adorns Krakow's main square and Warsaw's Royal Way. These Polish artists tried to preserve the nation's spirit with music and words. Those who remained in Poland continued to fight with swords and fists. By the end of the 19th century, the image of the Pole as a tireless, idealist insurgent emerged. During this time, some romantics, with typically melodramatic flair, dubbed Poland the Christ of Nations for the way it was misunderstood and persecuted by the world. At the end of World War I, Poland finally regained its independence, but peace didn't last long. In the early 20th century, Poland enjoyed a diverse ethnic mix, including Germans, Russians, Ukrainians, Lithuanians, and an enormous Jewish minority. A third of Poland spoke no Polish. In fact, the historic Baltic city of Gdansk, which was bicultural, both German and Polish, had been given a special free city status following World War I to avoid dealing with the prickly issue of whether to assign it to Germany or Poland. But then, on September 1, 1939, Hitler began World War II by attacking Gdansk to bring it into the German fold. With 6 million deaths in the next 6 years, Poland suffered the worst per capita World War II losses of any nation. At the war's end, as the victorious Allies shifted Poland's borders significantly westward, a massive movement of population took place. Germans from Western Poland were forced into Germany, and Poles from what would become Ukraine were transplanted to Poland proper. After millions died in the war, millions more were displaced from their ancestral homes. When the dust settled, Poland was in rubble and almost exclusively Polish. Poland was arguably hit harder by the Soviet regime than the other countries around them. As conditions worsened in the 1970s, food shortages were the norm. Stores were marked by long lines stretching around the block. Poles were issued ration coupons for food staples, and cashiers clipped off a corner when a purchase was made, assuming, of course, the item was in stock, which it wasn't most of the time. The little absurdities of communist life, which today seem almost comical, made every day a struggle. For years, every elderly woman in Poland had hair the same strange magenta color. There was only one color of dye available, so if you had dyed hair, the choice was simple. Let your hair grow out and look clownishly half red and white, or line up and go red. During these difficult times, the Poles also often rose up, staging major protests in 1956, 1968, 1970, and 1976. Stalin famously noted that introducing communists to the Poles was like putting a saddle on a cow. When an anti-communist Polish cardinal named Karol Wojtyla was elected Pope in 1978, then visiting his homeland in 1979, it was a sign to his countrymen that change was in the air. In 1980, Lech Walesa, an electrician at the shipyards in Gdansk, became the leader of the Solidarity Movement, the first workers' union in communist Eastern Europe. After an initial 18-day strike at the Gdansk shipyards, the communist regime gave in, legalizing Solidarity. But the union grew too powerful, and the communists felt their control slipping away. So in 1989, Poland's head of state, Jaruzelski, declared martial law in order to forestall Soviet intervention. Whether the Soviets actually would have intervened remains a hotly debated issue. Tanks ominously rolled through the cities and the streets of Poland, and the Poles were terrified. Martial law lasted until 1983. Each Pole has his or her own chilling memories of this frightening time. During riots, the people would flock into churches, the only place they could be safe from the ZOMO, or the riot police. But Solidarity struggled on, going underground and becoming a united movement of all demographics, of 10 million members strong, more than a quarter of the Poland's population. In July of 1989, the ruling Communist Party agreed to hold open elections, reserving 65% of representatives for themselves. Their goal was to appease Solidarity, but the plan backfired. Communists didn't win a single contested seat. These elections helped spark the chain reaction across Eastern Europe that eventually tore down the Iron Curtain. Lech Walesa became Poland's first post-communist president. What about the heritage of communism? While Poland has been free, democratic, and capitalist since 1989, even young adults carry lots of psychological baggage from living under communism. Although the younger generally embrace the fast new affluence with enthusiasm, many older people tend to be nostalgic about that slower-paced time that came with more security. And even young professionals with so much energy and hope now don't condemn everything about that stretch of history. A friend who was 13 in 1989 recalled those days this way. "My childhood is filled with happy memories. Under communism, life was family-oriented. Careers didn't matter. There was no way to get rich. No reason to rush, so we had time. People always had time. But there were also shortages. Many things were in deficit. Sometimes my uncle would bring us several toilet paper rolls held together with a string, absolutely the best gift anyone could give. I remember my mother and father had to organize for special events, somehow find a good sausage and some Coca-Cola. Boys in my neighborhood collected pop cans. Since drinks were very limited in Poland, cans from other countries represented a world of opportunities beyond our border. Parents could buy their children these cans on the black market, and the few families who were allowed to travel returned home with a treasure trove of cans. One boy up the street from me went to Italy and proudly brought back a Pepsi can. All of the boys in the neighborhood wanted to see it. It was a huge status symbol. But a month later, communism ended. You could buy whatever you wanted, and everyone's can collections were worthless. We had real chocolate only for Christmas. The rest of the year, for treats, we got something called chocolate-like product, which was sweet, dark, and smelled vaguely of chocolate. And we had oranges from Cuba for Christmas, too. Everybody was excited when the newspapers announced the boat with the oranges from Cuba is just 5 days from Poland. We waited with excitement all year for chocolate and those oranges. The smell of Christmas so special. Now we have that smell every day. Still, my happiest Christmases were under communism." Do Polish tell Polish jokes? Possibly so. "It's better to have a sister who's a whore than a brother in the ZOMO." "ZOMO police are hired based on the 90-90 principle. They have to weigh at least 90 kilograms, or 200 pounds, and their IQ must be at least 90. Some are dispatched in teams of three, one who can read, one who can write, and a third to protect those other two smart guys. And a Zomo policeman was sitting on the curb crying. Someone came up to him and asked what was wrong. "I lost my dog," he said. "No matter," the person replied. "He's a smart police dog. I'm sure he can find his way back to the station." "Yes," the Zomo said, "but without him, I can't." The communists gave their people no options at elections. If you voted, you voted for the regime. Poles like to joke that in some ways this made communists like God, who created Eve, then said to Adam, "Now choose a wife." It was said that communists could run a pig as a candidate and it would still win. A popular symbol of dissent became a pig painted with the words, "Vote Red." There were even jokes about jokes. Under communism, polls noted that there was a government-sponsored prize for the funniest political joke. 15 years in prison. Poland in the 21st century. What is its history now? When 10 new countries joined the European Union in May 2004, Poland was the most ambivalent of the bunch. After centuries of being under other empires' authority, the Poles were hardly eager to relinquish some of their hard-fought autonomy to Brussels. Many Poles thought the EU membership would make things worse: higher prices, a loss of traditional lifestyles, certainly worse before they got better. But most people agreed that their country had to join to survive in today's Europe. Today, most Poles begrudgingly acknowledge that the benefits of EU membership have outweighed the drawbacks. While other countries were planning their fireworks displays to celebrate EU enlargement, Poland was seized by a strange sort of mass hysteria. The country buzzed with rumors of increased prices. When the news reported that sugar would be subjected to a higher tax rate, there was a run on the stores, as the Poles bought up as much sugar as they could stockpile. The result? A shortage of sugar and higher prices, even before May 1st, the day for the celebrations. The most obvious initial impact of EU membership was the tremendous migration of young Poles seeking work in other EU countries, mostly Britain, Ireland, and Sweden, which waived visa requirements for Eastern European workers. Many of them found employment at hotels and restaurants. Visitors to London and Dublin are still likely to notice the surprising language barrier at the front desk of hotels, and Polish language expat newspapers have joined British gossip rags on newsstands. Those who remained in Poland were concerned about the brain drain of bright young people flocking out of their country. But with the recent global economic crisis, quite a few Pole expats have returned home. Poland is by far the most populous of the recent EU members, with nearly 39 million people, about the same as Spain or about half the size of Germany. This makes Poland the sixth largest of the 27 EU member states, giving it serious political clout, which it has already asserted, sometime to the dismay of the EU's more established powers. On the American political spectrum, Poland may be the most conservative country in Europe. Like a nation of Newt Gingrich's, Poles are phobic when it comes to big government, likely because they've been subjugated and manipulated by so many foreign oppressors over the centuries. For most of the 2000s, the country's right wing was represented by a pair of twin brothers, Lech and Jarosław Kaczyński. Their conservative Law and Justice Party is pro-tax cuts, fiercely Eurosceptic or anti-EU, and very Catholic. In 2005 presidential election, Lech Kaczyński emerged as the victor. Several months later, he took the controversial step of appointing his identical twin brother, Jarosław, as Poland's prime minister. The Kaczynski brothers were child actors who appeared in several popular movies together. Their biggest hit was titled Those Two Who Would Steal the Moon. As teenagers, they would switch identities and take tests for each other. The political spectrum swung back toward the center in October of 2007 when Kaczynski brothers' main political rival, the pro-EU Donald Tusk, led his civic platform party to victory in the parliamentary elections. The name Kaczynski loosely means duck, so the polls quipped that they were led by Donald and the ducks. Tragically, the levity wasn't to last. On April 10, 2010, a plane carrying President Lech Kaczynski crashed in a thick fog near the city of Smolensk, Russia. All 96 people on board, including top government, military, and business officials, high-ranking clergy, and others, were killed, plunging the nation into a period of stunned mourning. Poles wonder why, yet again, an unprecedented tragedy had befallen their nation. Ironically, the group's trip was intended to put a painful chapter of Poland's history to rest, a commemoration of the Polish officers and enlisted men killed in the Soviet massacre at Kievan. The ensuing election pitted the deceased president's brother, Yaroslav, against Donald Tusk's civic platform compatriot, Komorowski. Komorowski's victory gave the centrist civic platform the reins of Poland for the foreseeable future. I may never be able to pronounce correctly Polish words, but I certainly can enjoy the food and its beverages. Polish food is hearty and tasty. Since Poland is north of the Carpathian Mountains, its weather tends to be chilly, which limits the kind of fruits and vegetables that flourish here. Like other northern eastern countries such as Russia or Scandinavia, dominant staples include potatoes, dill, berries, beets, and bread. Much of what you might think of as Jewish food turns up on Polish menus, like gefilte fish, potato pancakes, chicken soup, which makes sense given that Poles and Jews lived in the same area for centuries under the same climatic and culinary influences. Polish soups are a highlight. The most typical are Zurek and Barzyczyk. Zurek, often translated as sour soup, is a light-colored soup made from sourdough base, usually containing a hard-boiled egg and pieces of sausage. Barzyczyk, better known as Americans as borscht, is the savory beet soup that is common in Russia. The borscht Ukrainian is similar, but has vegetables mixed in, usually cabbage, beets, and carrots. And then there's the Polish gazpacho, a cream soup with beets, onions, and radishes that's served cold. Another familiar Polish dish is pierogi. These ravioli-like dumplings come with various fillings. The most traditional are mincemeat, sauerkraut, mushroom, cheese, and blueberry. And many restaurants offer exotic fillings. It sounds perfect. Pierogi are often served with specks of fatty bacon to add flavor and a budget traveler's dream. Restaurants serving them are everywhere, and they're usually cheap, filling, and tasty. Another thing to look for is the milk bar, or bar Wymłozisny, which will be all around Poland. In the communist era, the government subsidized the food at milk bars, allowing lowly workers to enjoy a meal out. So this cafeteria-style restaurant is still continuing today. Poland still foots the bill for most of your milk bar meal, and prices are astoundingly low, somewhere around $4 to $5 for a complete meal. It's a great and cheap way to sample the traditional foods of Poland. There are two types of milk bars, updated modern cafeterias that cater to tourists, blah, add some modern twist to their traditional fare and charge about 50% more, and time machine dives that haven't changed for decades. At truly traditional milk bars, the service is aimed at locals, which means no English menu and a confusing ordering system. Every milk bar is a little different, but here's the general procedure. Head to the counter, wait to be acknowledged, and point to what you want. Handy vocabulary, to, sounds like toe, means this, and e means and. In the milk bar, if the lady asks me any questions, you have three options. Nod stupidly until she just gives you something. Repeat one of the things she just said, assuming she's asked you to choose between two options like meat or cheese in your pierogi. Or hope that a kindly English-speaking Pole in line will leap to your rescue. If nothing else, ordering at a milk bar is an adventure in gestures. Smiling seems to be slightly better and extends the patience of the milk bar staffers. Once your tray is all loaded up, pay the cashier, do a double take when you realize how cheap the bill is, then find a table. After the meal, it's polite, if not expected, to bus your own dishes to the little window. Watch locals and just imitate what they do. Another food I might want to try is bigos. It's a rich sauerkraut stew cooked with meat, mushrooms, and whatever's in the pantry. Govabki is a dish of cabbage leaves stuffed with mincemeat and rice in a tomato mushroom sauce and sounds delicious. Kutlet shvabovi is a fried pork chop and probably once pretty scarce in communist Poland, but remains a local favorite to this day. K-A-C-Z-K-A is duck and is popular, as is fish, which trout is P-S-T-R-A-G, and they do have carp, K-A-R-P. Watch out for that vigors, because that's eel. Poland has good pastries, and there's many bakery specials in breads and other types of pastries. The szwarlotka is an apple cake. The surnik is cheesecake. The weinbreda is a gooey Danish. And the tpolionka is a French-style treat with layers of crispy wafers and custard. Vody, or L-O-D-Y, is ice cream. And the favorite sweet is their beloved traditional candy, Potasi Mrozko, or bird's milk, which is like a semi-sour marshmallow covered with chocolate. Vodka is a Polish staple. Woda is water. So woda mineralna is bottled water. And then, of course, avoid the gas. Zwiebiek and Optium are the best-known brands of Pivo, their beer. So, it is a Pivo for me. And na zdrowie Polska. Cheers to Poland.